So we're going to be studying a Gemara here on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph in Brachos. I have one copy. You're certainly free to make more copies if you need.
Go on, get your book.
And I'm going to offer a little bit of an introduction here, some of which will be a review of what we did, what we've done in the past. But if you're on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, then you're looking two lines up before the end of the Amud. And just to give you background, as we've discussed in the past, the first Mishnah, Masechta Brachos, addresses the question, when is the latest time for Kriyat Shema at night? Right, the Torah says, U'bishalvacha, when you go to sleep. So we have three opinions mentioned in the Mishnah. There are two extreme opinions with a kind of a compromise opinion right down the middle. On the one hand, we have the most strict, the most demanding opinion, L'chumra, that's Rabbi Eliezer, and he says you have only until the end of the first segment of the night. So assuming the night is divided into four Ashmoros, and a perfect night would be 12 hours, that would be 3 hours into the night. So you really only have 3 hours, according to Rabbi Eliezer. If you divide up the night into three Ashmoros, each one is 4 hours, so you have 4 hours into the night. So let's say the night begins, say at 7 p.m., then you'd add either 3 hours up till 10 p.m. or 4 hours up to 11 p.m. That's called U'bishal b'cha, according to Rabbi Eliezer. That's the latest time for Kriyat Shema. It might be as early as 11 p.m. On the other extreme, we have the view of the Chachamim, the rabbis themselves. I'm sorry, skip that. On the other extreme, we have the view of Rabbi Gamliel. If you remember, when his family came back from a wedding, and when they're out pretty late, he told them that they could read Kriyat Shema up until daybreak. So you have the entire night, according to Rabbi Gamliel. Then we have the middle compromise, Shita, which is the opinion of the Chachamim, and they say Ad Chatzot, meaning until midnight. So it's much later than Rabbi Eliezer, but it's much earlier than the Chachamim. So the Gemara now is going to try to analyze this three-way debate between, again, Rabbi Eliezer, who allows you only a short amount of time, 3 or 4 hours into the night, Chachamim, who say until midnight, and then Rabbi Gamliel, who gives you the most amount of time until daybreak, which is called Amud HaShachar. So if you take a look, and I mentioned this to you in the past, whenever you see two dots, you know that the printer is going to quote the Mishnah in order to give us the background so that we can kick off our study of the sugya. So here you'll see two dots on the bottom of Daf Dalet, on the next to last line. And then it says, who can tell me what Vav Chaf Chaf Vav Chet Chaf Aleph is? That's an abbreviated form for what?
We're on the last line of
next to the last line.
Next to the last line?
Yeah, in other words, if you go up one line and then the second line before the end of the page, you'll see towards the end of that line two dots.
I see. Amar
Aleph. Are you on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph? You know, Dalet has two sides to it. There's the right side, and you're on the wrong side. No, you're on the second side.
Yeah, Chachamim,
and what's the Aleph? Omrim. Omrim. So that's Chachamim Omrim, Ad Chatzot. And we said that the Chachamim represent that compromise, middle of the road opinion that allow you to read Kriyat Shema up until midnight. So they're more lenient than Rabbi Eliezer, who is the most strict, but yet they didn't go as far as the Rabbi Gamliel. The opinion of Rabbi Gamliel allowed you to read Kriyat Shema the entire night. And now the Gemara is going to ask the following question. First I'll read the entire question, and then we'll sort of take it apart word for word. Chachamim keman svirulahu. The Chachamim, like whom? Keman. Now the Chaf is added as a prefix to the word man. Man means them. And when you have ke, it means like them. But here in a question, it means like whom. Svira means they maintain, they hold. Lahu, that's what they hold. In other words, like whom do they hold? Now what this is going to mean is that whenever you see a compromised view, the Gemara is always going to analyze, well, it really doesn't make any sense. It's either black or white. It can't be in the middle. Either the Pasuk says Bishagbacha means when you go to sleep, and people normally go to sleep during the first segment of the night, or Bishagbacha means as long as you're sleeping, and people usually remain sleeping for the entire night. Here we have the Chachamim who are not here nor there. They come up with this middle view which doesn't seem to belong anywhere. Keman Svir Lahu. Who do they hold like? If Kirabi Eliezer Svir Lahu, if they hold like Rabbi Eliezer, which means that Bishalbucha means when you go to sleep, Lemru Kirabi Eliezer, then they should say that the first part of the night is the time period in which people go to sleep. They climb into their beds during the first Ashmorah of the night, the first segment of the night, so that by, let's say, 11 p.m., everybody's in bed. Not everybody, there are late, you know, people who stay up late, but most people go to sleep by the end of the first Ashmorah. And now we turn to Daf Dalid Amid Beis. Ve'i ki Rabbi Gamliel Svir Lahu. But if Svirlu, if they hold like Rabbi Gamliel, which means that Ubishabacha doesn't mean when people go to sleep, but rather it means when people are usually sleeping in their bed. Well, how long do people usually remain sleeping in their bed? Through the entire night, not just till midnight. Is Lemru, then why don't they say Ki Rabbi Gamliel, that you're allowed to read Kriyat Shema up until daybreak? In other words, to summarize, the Gemara is very perplexed here about the view of the Chachamim, which is a compromised view of midnight, doesn't seem to fit into any definition, any interpretation of the word Bishalbucha. Bishalbucha means either when you go to sleep or when you are sleeping. But it doesn't mean midnight. I mean, midnight is not at all hinted in this verse. Li'olam, says the Gemara, I have an answer for you. In truth, the rabbis hold Kir Rabbi Gamliel Svir Lahu. They hold like Rabbi Gamliel, which means that Bishavucha means the entire night. So why do they say that the latest time for Kriyat Shema is Chatzos midnight? The answer is V'hadaka Amri, and that which they said Ad Chatzot only until midnight, Kidei, in order that Larchik, to distance et other man min avera, from violating the law. It means the following. If you're going to tell the people that they have the entire night to read Kriyat Shema, what are they going to do? What is the normal psychology of a person who comes home at night, you know, his wife gives him dinner, and he wants to relax, put up his feet on the thing, and he wants to watch a little television, you know what I'm saying? What is he going to do if you tell him, you know what, you got the entire night to read Kriyat Shema, no sweat, no pressure. What's he going to do? He'll wait till the last minute. He'll go to sleep. You know, he's on the couch and he falls asleep, and before you know it, it's already too late. It's daybreak. That's called kidei larchik et adam min ha'avera. And this reflects, if you've ever learned the ethics of the fathers, Pirkei Avot, the first Mishnah says, Asu Siag La Torah. The rabbis are authorized, and not only authorized, but they're obligated to make a siag. A siag means a fence. You know, if you go too close, you know what I mean? Let's say you have a ditch. You know, people are curious. They want to see what's at the bottom of the ditch. Well, a little bit of air, of wind, is gonna push them over the ledge. And before you know it, they fall down to the bottom. So you have to keep your distance, because something that's very dangerous, you don't get too close. So tomorrow I'm going to give a lecture, you're not obligated to attend, but in the OU Center, if you heard of it, on the topic of the internet. So the internet is also like a deep ditch. You know, if you get too close, you can fall all the way down, down, down. So you have to make yourself certain, harchakot, you know, to stay a little bit away from it. Maybe only use the internet when it's necessary, or put a filter on your internet. I'm going to go through a whole variety of lists of recommendations. Because the internet can be very, very dangerous in many, many different ways. Okay, now at this point in the development of the sugya, the Gemara wants to embellish this idea that Kriyat Shema should be read earlier than later. Don't wait to recite Kriyat Shema till the last minute. Make sure that you recite Kriyat Shema by midnight. And we're going to embellish this from a Braita. As we've said over and over again, a Braita is literature from the time of the Mishnah, the Tanoim, that was left out of the Mishnah. Kiditanya. This Gemara says, I can support this as we saw, as we learned in a Braita. Chachamim, the rabbis who commanded us to read Kriyat Shema no later than midnight, asu siag lidivrayim. What they were doing is they were setting up a siag is a fence, lidivrayim, for their words. Now again, the for their words, lidivrayim, is a little bit problematic, because this is a siag for the Torah, not for their words. The Torah says you have to read Kriyat Shema b'shalvacha before daybreak, and they're setting up a siag to make sure that you read Kriyat Shema by midnight. So the word l'divrayim here is a little bit problematic, but that's going to be a subject of the more advanced literature that we're not going to get into. Now, why did they create this fence requiring you to read Kriyat Shema no later than midnight? Kidei, so that, shalom, yehei adam, a person should not manifest the following behavior. Bo min asadeh, bo erev, he comes back from his field, he's a farmer. Bo erev means in what? What's bo erev? Help me out here. In the evening, correct. Omer, he declares, eilech leveiti, I'm going to go home, v'ochal kim'ah, I will take a small bite to eat. Ochal means I'll eat something. Kima is a small amount. That's an Aramaic word. Veshte kima, and I'll drink a little bit. Veishan kima, and I'll sleep a little bit. I'll chap a snooze, right? I'll take a little dribble, as we call it in Yiddish. Veachakach, and afterwards, I krak kriyat shema. I'll recite kriyat shema because I have the balance of the night. Vetalel, and I'll pray. And then what happens? V'chotafto shena. Shena means what?
Sleeping.
And what's chotaf? What is lachtof? Even in modern Hebrew.
To snag.
To snag, to grab something. So what happens is the sleep grabs him. A beautiful phrase here in this Braisa. That sometimes sleep grabs a hold of you. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. I had it last night. I Baruch Hashem, I had recited Kriyat Shema, but what I meant to say, last night, I went to sleep, I was totally exhausted, at around 9:30, I think. The next thing I knew, even though I told someone to wake me up in a half hour, it was 3:30 a.m. Hmm. So that's what happens, you know, you go to try to get a little bit of a sleep, but sleep gets a hold of you. It's interesting that this same phrase, that sleep grabs you, is the formulation of the Mishnah with regard to the night of the Seder. And the Mishnah wants to know until what, you know, when do you finish, when do you complete and complete the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, of telling the story of Egypt. He says to go ahead and on until Ad Shechavteinu Shina, until sleep gets a hold of you. Also, some say that on Purim you're supposed to drink wine until the sleep grabs a hold of you. This is a phrase that repeats itself in many different contexts. So what it really means is a person cannot necessarily control how long he'll sleep. He thinks he's going to sleep for a half hour, but he ends up sleeping for 5 hours. And by the time he wakes up, it's too late for Kriyat Shema. V'nimtza yoshen kol halayla, and it'll turn out that he sleeps through the entire night because he was overcome by sleep. And he's not going to recite Kriyat Shema, he's not going to pray the night prayers of Arvit on time. Sefer the Chachamim set up a fence around the Torah law, and they required you to read Kriyat Shema no later than midnight. What happens if you got home late from an event, from a party, a bar mitzvah, a wedding, and it's already after midnight? You should read Kriyat Shema. That was the story of Rav Gamliel and his sons in the Mishnah.
This concept in general of having something that's fulfilled l'chatchila, and then saying, well, and then b'dyavad, you can do it this way, I'm not really sure like how effective that is in distance.
I mean, once you know in your psychology,
that there's a b'dyavad time, you're not so, it's harder to be makbid about keeping the l'chatchila time, like for tefillah, like,
right.
If you know that you can read the blessings of Shema until Chatzot, but the Yevid, there's some poskim who say you got to eat until the earliest Mincha time. Like, it's hard.
I feel like this is more like eating chicken and milk.
If you start eating chicken and milk, you'll come to eat meat and milk. You mean that kind of thing?
Yeah, like,
but that's a classic Siyam, correct? But as far as your question is concerned, once he knows that, you know, if need be, he still has a fallback position, that's the subject of the next piece of Gemara that we're gonna study now. Because basically we presented the Braisa, but we didn't finish the Braisa yet. And the Braisa now recommends the following. Aval, however, this is what a Jew should do. Adam ba min ha-sadeh, a person comes back from the field, ba'erev, in the evening. The first thing he should do is, before he calculates, you know, grabbing a bite and getting a little sleep, Nichnas lebeit ha-knesset. He should make a beeline for the synagogue. Im ragil lekrot korei. If he has a chavrusa to read the Torah. Now, reading the Torah is a reference to which Torah? You know, we have two Torahs.
Well, it's night, so he should be reading Torah Shabbat.
Well, in this case, he's not up to that level. So on his level, he's going to read Torah Shebichtav. Because again, whenever you see the word kore, which means to read, it's always by definition a reference to Torah Shebichtav. Im ragil, if on the other hand he has a chavrusa, he's regularly lishnot. Lishnot means to learn what's called Mishnah, which is called Torah Shebal Peh, the oral law, shone. He should learn Mishnah. So, for example, if a person is capable of learning Gemara, that's what he should do. Then, after he finishes learning, Kore Kriyat Shema, he should recite Kriyat Shema, Umit Palel, and he prays the Arvis prayer, and then he goes home, Ochel Pito, he eats his dinner, Umevarech, and he recites what's called Berchat HaMazon, the grace after meals, and that's what a good Jew should do. So instead of going directly home after a day of work, the Braisa recommends that he take a detour, and before he goes home, he should go into the synagogue. Then the Braisa finishes with the following words. V'chol hover al divrei chachamim, and anyone who violates the words of the rabbis, meaning if he disobeys the mandate of the rabbis, chayav mita, he deserves to die. Now, why does he deserve to die? So Rashi here quotes a verse from Kohelet. In Kohelet, Shlomo HaMelech says the following, uporeitz gader yishachenu nachash, someone who's poreitz a gader, he breaks through the fence, he should be bitten by a serpent.
Unless he's a king.
And what does that mean, that he broke through a fence? The Chachamim set up a fence, as we said before, that's called a siag. He breaks through the fence. He violates the Chachamim, he rebels. He says, you know what? I don't care about what the Chachamim tell me. I'm better than that. You know, I can break through this fence. I can go home, have my meal, grab a little rest, and no problem for me. Now, the Braita wants to give us a very strong admonishment, to instill the fear of the Lord in our hearts, and tell us, don't think that you're smarter than the Chachamim, and you're the exception to the rule, because you're not above the law. And the law was made for a person like you, just like it was made by a person for me. You are violating the words of the Chachamim. Now, this, one of the super commentaries on Tractate Brachot is Rabbeinu Yonah. Have you heard of Rabbeinu Yonah? Rabbeinu Yonah was a rabbi about 1,000 years ago who lived in Spain. And I don't know, gentlemen, if you're... I'm not advocating that you take a trip to Spain, but if you're ever in Spain, you could actually visit Rabbeinu Yonah's local town, not only his town, which is called Gurundi, you could also see where were the cobblestones on which the Jewish people walked when they lived in that ghetto in Spain 1,000 years ago, where Rabbeinu Yonah actually stepped on his feet. You could even look at the doorposts and you could see where the mezuzah was placed. It's an amazing trip. There are other things to see. There's a museum there, a Jewish museum, in which they have tombstones that were destroyed, that were partially destroyed, but they were able to salvage them. Some of those tombstones are hundreds and hundreds of years old, from the period of the Golden Age of Spain, Golden Age for the Jewish people, way before the Spanish Inquisition. So that's Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah makes the following comment. He says, why is a person who violates the mandate of the rabbis, why does he deserve death? If a person doesn't put on tefillin, which is a positive command in the Torah, or even if a person, for that matter, eats non-kosher food, nowhere does it say that he's chayav misa, that he deserves to die. Does everybody identify with that question? I mean, it's a very profound question. How could the Gemara say that by rebelling against the Chachamim you deserve to die? Well, even if you rebel against the Torah law and you violate a lotas, that do not, or you don't fulfill an essay, a positive command, nowhere does it say that you chayav misa. Again, there are capital crimes like idolatry and immorality and idol worship and murder and so forth and so on. But those are the exceptions rather than the rule. So here's what Rabbeinu Yonah comes up with. He says the following, that there's a fundamental difference between a person who may have succumbed to the to the powers of the evil inclination, and unfortunately he ate something that he shouldn't have eaten, he didn't fulfill a mitzvah. That's called Yitzro Tokfo. His Yitzro got the best of him. His evil inclination overpowered him. That's not what we're talking about here. Here we're talking about a person who is guilty of what's called zilzul. Does anybody know what the word zilzul means? Lizalzel, even in modern Hebrew, means you don't take it seriously. You this guy is not overcome by his yetzer. He's going to say, you know what? I know better. I'm smarter than the Chachamim. That's called porek ol. Porek ol means when you have a weight, a yoke on your shoulders, and you cast it off your shoulders. He's porek ol chachamim. And basically what he's doing is he's questioning and undermining the very authority of the chachamim. He's saying, you know what? I don't have to listen to the chachamim. I want to listen to my own better judgment. And that is a very severe violation, because basically if he puts himself outside the pale of the chachamim, it's going to be very difficult for him to ever do tshuva, to repent for such a sin, because he never takes the Rabbanan seriously. So when they come to rebuke him or chastise him, he shrugs it all off. He thinks he's smarter than the chachamim. So if he makes this deliberate rebellion against the chachamim, casting off the yoke of their authority from his shoulders, then he really has placed himself outside the camp of Jewish life. And it's not enough just to say, well, you know, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination got the best of me. That's not what's going on over here. You know, it's not that he couldn't go to synagogue as the Chachamim told him to do. You know, he just had this craving to go home and eat gluttonously. You know, he could have taken a little sandwich bag with him if he was hungry, and had a little bit of fruit, a little bit of a snack. He didn't have to, he wasn't dying of hunger that he had to go home. He made a statement, and he said, I'm an over al divrei chachamim. That's a very severe violation, says Rabbeinu Yonah, and it has tremendous repercussions. Now Rabbeinu Yonah goes a step further here, which is already very, very revolutionary, and he says that when the chachamim issue an enactment, like for example, that you have to read Kriyat Shema no later than midnight, that has the status of a Torah law. My friends, are you listening? I don't see anyone listening here. This is something revolutionary. He's saying, Rabbi Yonah, that after the Chachamim tell us that we have to read Kriyat Shema no later than midnight, that counts under the Torah law. How so? And the answer is, I'll read you his language. Chachamim ismichu es takanaseyem ala katuv lo tasur min adavar asher yagidu lecha yaminu small. If you look at Sefer Dvarim, we'll get to this in about 6 weeks or so in the Kriyas HaTorah, we'll get to the parasha called Shoftim, and in parasha Shoftim, the Torah says you shall not deviate from what they tell you, not to the left and not to the right. And the person who is at the most extreme violator of this rule is called a Zaken Mamre. He's an elder who stands up and rebels against the Chachamim, against the rabbis. And he's put to death. Here, we're talking about a mini microcosmic Zaken Mamre. He's saying, I don't have to listen to the Chachamim, I know better. And in that sense, he's like a Zaken Mamre. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, if he's like a Zaken Mamre, that's the elder who rebels against the authority of the courts, of the rabbis, then just like the Zaken Mamre is put to death, he deserves to die.
Would you say that someone who's relying on a minority, like a lenient opinion, would be also over al divrei chachamim, like a lenient opinion that's not the majority?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a great thing. You know, I wouldn't give him, you know, extra brownie points for that, but I wouldn't say that that's what we're talking about here. You know, he's not an over al divrei chachamim. He thinks that the halacha is with these chachamim. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you're getting into a very profound sugya, which has many different branches to it. That sometimes the Gemara has what's called vehilchisa, in which case the Gemara itself rejects one opinion in favor of the other opinion. That's not the case that you're talking about. In that case, the original opinion is no longer normative halacha. It's no longer to be accepted. Mm-hmm. But if the Gemara didn't say vehilchita, then we have what's called a tradition of psak, of decision. And that tradition is something that develops over the course of time. So again, if a person would say, well, I'm going to reject the tradition and I'm going to find some sort of opinion back in the time of the Gemara, again, I wouldn't give him a shishi, you know, for that, but I wouldn't say that he fits into this category. You know, he just wants to jump over certain centuries of time and go back to the original opinion. But again, that would only be a possibility if the Gemara didn't come up with a final answer. Now, if you're interested about the word vehilchita, so I think I mentioned to you in the past that one of the great tools, I think it's the greatest contribution of the 20th century, we're already in the next century, but in the 20th century, for Talmudic literature, is called Encyclopedia Talmudit. Have you seen it? It's a massive work. I think they already have maybe 35, 40 volumes. I'm not sure exactly how many. And the work keeps going on. It's according to the alphabet, so they're up to the letter Chaf. And many of the volumes have been translated into English. So in one of the volumes, I don't remember if it's volume 9 or volume 10, there's an essay called Halakha. And there they go through all the rules and regulations when the Gemara actually says Halakha. For example, the Gemara will tell us that in a debate between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, Halakha ki Beit Hillel. Mm-hmm. Now if somebody today in the 21st century would get up and say, no, I'm smarter than the Gemara, I paskin like Beit Shammai against Beit Hillel, that would be a real no-no. That would probably come under this Gemara that we're learning over al divrei chachamim. But there are 1,000 rules about halacha. You know, when we paskin, for example, in Abaye v'Rava, the Gemara has 6 exceptions in which we paskin like Abaye against Rava. But there are more than 6, really. Those are the 6 most profound and famous ones. In any event, Let's get back to the Gemara now. We finish with the Braita. Now, how do I know that the Braita has ended? You know, there are no dots in my Gemara. There are no vowels or full stop.
I'm switching back to Aramaic.
Correct. We're switching back to Aramaic. Excellent. Maishna b'chol duchta. Maishna is a classic phrase in the Gemara all over Shas, all over the place, on every page in the Shas. Maishna, why is it different? B'chol duchta, from every other place. In other words, we don't find over and over again this refrain, quote, Kol ha'over al divrei chachamim chayav misa. Whoever rebels against the rabbis is chayav misa. Why do we find it here in this particular context? Bechol duchta in other places, lo katani chayav misa. We don't find this language in a braiso. We can go through myriads of braisos that tell you what the chachamim enacted, but they never add this postscript of kol ha'over al divrei chachamim chayav misa. Maishna hachav, why is it different here? De katani Chai of Misa.
So it's saying that someone, an over al Debrech Achmim, would be someone who would say, oh, well, it's there's a rabbi who says I can read until Amud Shecha, so why don't I just wait until then instead of...
Well, not a rabbi, it's either you or me. It doesn't have to be a rabbi. I mean, well, you're a rabbi, I'm not, but let's say any person who says this, makes this statement and says... you know, I'm going to go to sleep, don't worry about me, I set my alarm clock, my wife will wake me up. He's included in this postscript, this last line of the Braita, Kol Over El Divrei Chachamim. That's the end of the Braita. Now the Gemara wants to understand, there are many, many different Braitot all over Shas, for different halachot, that tell you exactly when, based on the siag that the Chachamim enacted, when you have to fulfill a mitzvah. Why is it that here... You know, this is like for the night of the Seder Manishtana. Manishtana, why is this halacha different than all the other halachot? Why don't the rabbis in the Braita repeat this refrain after every single presentation? That if you don't listen to what we said, and you don't uphold the siag, then you're chayav misa. Why do we find it here? So the Gemara now is going to... So that's called Maishna. Why is this different? So the Gemara now is going to offer two different answers. How do I know the Gemara is going to offer two different answers? That I know from the phrase, Ibayit Ema. Ibayit, if you want, Ema, I'll tell you this. And whenever you see Ibayit Ema, if you want, I'll tell you this. What's around the bend is, if you don't want, I'll tell you this. And I was going to offer you two answers, two alternatives. The first answer is the following. Here the writer felt compelled to emphasize the absolute severity and the significance, the very heavy significance of living up to the words of the rabbis. Why? Mishum de'ika ones shena. Because there is sleeping. Now again, what does ones mean? You remember we said before that sometimes sleep overcomes you, it overwhelms you. Whether you like it or not, that's called an ones. An ones means circumstances beyond your control. You know, you're exhausted. You woke up very early this morning. You put in a full day's work. Like, for example, I don't know if this will mean anything to you, Sam. Let's say you prepared for your law boards. Uh-huh. Yeah? Did you stay up very late at night? Maybe not. Okay, so maybe I gave a bad example. But let's say you were studying for your med boards, and it would determine your entire future, whether you get into medical school or you don't. So if you're very serious about medical school, because that's your goal in life, you're not going to be able to sleep at night. You got to put in extra hours. So what's going to happen is, if you don't get your sleep at night, at some point you'll be overwhelmed by sleep. You'll fall asleep whether you like it or not.
I'm sure I would do it for the bar, just not for the LSAT, because the LSAT has nothing to do with law. So like, all you can do is take practice tests and stuff.
And
like
it's worthless anyway. So
yeah. Yeah. No, it is worth something.
I know someone who like had to take a blood test in Kupat Cholimia. Yeah. He stayed up the whole night studying for his blood test. At least I got a laugh out of you. Okay, fine. So there's an onus.
I'm so sorry. I don't know like where we are.
Oh, that's not good. So we're on page 4B, Dalet Amud Bet.
Okay.
So look for 4B.
Yeah, and I'm on 4B.
Okay. And you're going to look for Ibayit Ema. Let's see.
It's subsection 2. It's page 2. 42.
Okay. If you...
Okay.
Hopefully you'll find it.
Left side.
Yeah.
Okay, it should be from, if you count from the top of the page.
VE boys. Okay, got it.
Yeah. Well, no, VE boys is coming around the bend. We're on the first E boys, the first answer. So that should be, I would say, maybe approximately 12 lines down from the top of the page.
It wasn't.
E boys Tema? Maybe it's 15 lines down from the top of the page.
I got it.
So why are the Chachamim getting so uptight here? Why are they so nervous? And the answer is because, you know, if you're contending against a very severe, a very powerful adversary, in this case sleep is a very powerful adversary, a person's exhausted, they're going to fall asleep, they'll miss Kriyat Shema. So the Chachamim felt that in this case they really had to sock it to us. You know, they had to warn us with the most frightful and the most, awe-inspiring admonition, because we're really fighting against a tough situation. By the way, is anyone here in the room who's ever actually fallen asleep standing?
Yeah.
I have. I've actually fallen asleep standing. And what happens is I start falling and I catch myself right at the last second. It's amazing that sleep can overcome you. And there's a whole science about sleep today. You know, scientists do all sorts of research projects on sleep. You can go on, you know, Google sleep experiments on the internet. You'll be fascinated by different experiments they do about sleep. And today there's a whole science of people who cannot sleep, you know, and why they cannot sleep. It might have to do with the breathing, and then they have to put a mask on, if you know of anyone who suffers what's called sleep disorders. But anyone who doesn't have enough sleep at night is going to fall asleep. And therefore, Chachamim realize they're up against a tough situation here. And if you like, I'll give you a different answer. And that's Lafuki. They were fighting against a different phantom, so to speak, a different adversary. Lafuki, to exclude Miman from him, the Omar who said, quote, Tfilat Arvit Rishut. This is an entire sugya, one of the most profound pieces of Gemara in the entire Masechet Brachot. It's on page 27b. And that's about the status of the Arvit prayer. Because what happens is that the three prayers that we pray on a daily basis correspond to the Karbanot that were brought on a daily basis in the Beit HaMikdash. Now, there were two Tmidim. There was what's called the Tamid Shel Shachar, the morning offering, and then there was the Tamid Shel Bein Arbayim, the afternoon offering. And corresponding to those, we have Shacharit and we have Mincha. But there were no offerings at all that were brought after nightfall. And basically, the Beit HaMikdash is closed for business at night. So therefore, there's one opinion in the Gemara. We don't accept that opinion necessarily. Well, it's complicated. Maybe we do accept it, we don't accept it. I'll try to explain what I mean by that. But that opinion says, Tfilat Arvit Rishut. What does Rishut mean?
Optional.
It's optional, correct. You can voluntarily pray Arvit, or you can not pray Arvit. Kamash Malon, okay, that's a phrase that you have to memorize. Again, if you have Dr. Frank's book, which is called Talmudic Dictionary, which I think I gave you, I hope you still have it, you'll look up Kamash Malon, and he'll show you that Kamash Malon means that he wants to teach you Dechova, that this is an obligation. So that the first answer of the Gemara is we're worried about sleep, and specifically you'll miss the time for Kriyat Shema. But we didn't focus on tefillah, on prayer. Now in the second answer, we're focusing our attention on tefillah, on prayer. And it's very important that a person shouldn't have a laid-back attitude about the night prayer. He'll say to himself, well, you know, it's only Rishut anyway, it's only voluntary, why shouldn't I go home, be with my wife, relax, have a smoke, watch some television, put my feet up, take a little Dremel, sleep a little, and then I'll daven Ma'ariv. And what happens is, he wakes up in the morning and he says, oh no, I didn't daven Arvit. And why does he have such a laid-back attitude? Because he's an Iber Chacham. He's smarter than you are. He knows that Tfilat Arvit Rishut. But the truth is that this writer wants to tell you, no, Tfilat Arvit is a Chovah. It's an obligation. Now at this point, I want to tell you the honest truth. We accept the opinion that Tfilat Arvit Rishut. What does it mean here, Chovah? Chovah means that we have accepted upon ourselves as a community. This is true for both Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, Hasidim and Snagdim, Kalbach people and not Kalbach people, everybody. Anybody, wherever group you're in, we've all accepted upon ourselves Tfilat Arvit as a Chovah. Again, in its original formulation, Arvit is a Rishut, because as we said before, there's no corresponding Korban. However, we accept the view that the three tefillot correspond to the three avot, because we have proof that Avram, he organized tefillat shacharit. Again, it wasn't exactly in the form as we have it today, but in some way, the morning required prayer. Yitzchak, mincha. Yaakov, arvit. And again, all this is based on a very long and intricate sugya on page 27b. Now, since Yaakov, our forefather Yaakov, Jacob established Tfilat Arvit, we accepted upon ourselves that despite the fact that the Beit HaMikdash is closed and there's no Korban at that time, nevertheless, we pray Arvit. So Arvit became a Chovah only because we accepted it upon ourselves. Now, I don't know if you ever heard of one of the Rishonim back 1,000 years ago called the Ravad. Okay, he was in an area of France called Provence. Anyway, he says that even though we accepted upon ourselves Arvit as a Chovah, nevertheless, the prayer itself is not a Chovah. I mean, Reb Chaim Brisker, I don't know if you heard of him, he was my Rebbe's great-grandfather. He wrote treatises on this. He was my Rebbe's grandfather, sorry. He wrote treatises on this machloka between the Rambam and the Raivin. I'll tell you what it's relevant to. I mean, I want to go on in the Gemara, but I'll just mention to you. I don't know if you ever had this experience. I've had it many times. Where you go to daven, and then you realize, oh no, I davened already. So what do? You're midway through Shmoneh Esrei, through the Amidah, and all of a sudden you reminded yourself that, hey, I already prayed this Amidah. Again, as you gentlemen will get older, it'll happen to you more often, because that's the nature of older age. Mm-hmm. But it could happen even to a young person, especially if you change your normal schedule. Then you get all fluked up. You know, instead of praying here, you pray here. You don't even remember that you changed your schedule. Like, let's say you went to a bar mitzvah, and in the middle of the bar mitzvah, they had Arvit, and then you get home and you go to the shul like you always do every night, and then you realize, wait a minute, at the bar mitzvah I prayed Arvit. So what do? If you're halfway through the Shmoneh Esrei, you have two options. Exactly. One option is to stop, dead in your tracks, and that's it. Don't go on, because you cannot pray this prayer, and I'll explain why. The other option, which we're going to reject, is that you can change your tune, and now for the rest of the prayer, it could be what's called a tefillas nedava. It could be an optional prayer. So the reason why that option is rejected is because you started the prayer as chovah, as an obligation, because in your mind you thought you were obligated. You cannot shift you cannot make a transition in the very essence of the Amidah, of the Shmoneh Esrei, and now make it into a nedava, because you started as a chovah, and these are two entities that don't mix together. They cannot be integrated. However, in the case of Arvit, it's a little bit different, because you started Arvit as a Rishut. It's already a kind of Nedava, because if you hold Tfilat Arvit Rishut, it's not obligatory. So now you can make a shift in the middle and make it into a Nedava. However, the question is, since we accepted upon ourselves, voluntarily, we accepted ourselves the Chovah, the obligation to pray Arvit, does that change the whole nature of the tefillah? And now again, I started it as a chovah, and if I cannot change in the middle. So this is a gigantic controversy between the Rambam and the Raivid, and Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik has a very, very famous analysis of this controversy. Okay, now we want to go on in the Gemara. Without further ado, Omar Mar. What does Omar Mar mean?
Master said.
Okay, that's an Art Scroll translation. But what I want to know, just in terms of methodology, to get used to the language and the structure of the Gemara, what does Omar Mar mean?
It's the Gemara speaking.
Omar Mar means, let's go back to something that we studied earlier. Mm-hmm. It's very important that you get this down. Omar Mar. And again, if you were
does
in my
gut, necessarily mean it's referencing a Mishnah?
Not necessarily a Mishnah. It could be a Brisa. It could be a Gemara. It could be anything. But what it is a previously quoted statement. And when the Gemara says Omar Mar, it introduces an analysis that was postponed of an earlier statement. Now we're ready to analyze. The Brisa that we just studied before said, Kore Kriyat Shema Umitpalel. That when a person comes back from a day's work in the fields, then he should recite Kriyat Shema, and then he should mitpalel. Well, let me ask you a question. And that's going to be the Gemara's analysis here. What is the sequence? Does Kriyat Shema come first and then Tefillah? Or perhaps the opposite? Maybe Tefillah should come first and then Kriyat Shema. So what we're about to embark upon is a famous, world-famous, world-classic sugya called Smichut Geula L'Tefillah. Let me explain. Kriyat Shema ends with the third parsha, but then we have what's called Birchat Kriyat Shema. And Birchat Kriyat Shema ends with Gaal Yisrael, thanking God for the redemption. After we thank God for the redemption, then we accept that God has redeemed us from slavery back in the time of Mitzrayim, and now we're ready to pray. Why are we ready to pray? Because prayer indicates a total shibud, a total servitude to Almighty God. So first we thank God for saving us and redeeming us from slavery. Now we're ready to actually be a servant to God. What's the first thing we do when we recite Shmon Esrei? Watch my finger. What's that called? We bow. We bow our head. Right? Why do we bow? Because we want to demonstrate that we are servants of the Almighty. That's called smichut, which means close, the closeness of Ge'ulav Gal Yisrael to Tefillah, to the prayers. In fact, if let's say in the morning you say Gal Yisrael and somebody says, oh, how are you today? Do you give him an answer? Oh, no.
If you fear him?
No, no interruption. You have to go straight from Ge'ulah L'Tefillah. Again, I'm not going through all the halachot with you, but you have to understand and appreciate that this is a major... So if I tell you smichut Ge'ulah L'Tefillah, what comes first?
Gal Yisrael.
Gal Yisrael, and what does that mean in terms of the relationship between Kriyat Shema and the sequence between Kriyat Shema and Tefillah?
Don't make an interruption.
No, I'm saying, which comes first? Sequence. A before B, B before A. What comes first? Kriyat Shema has to come first. Because it's only in the culmination of Kriyat Shema that we recite Gal Yisrael. Now we're ready for Tefillah. If you switch the order around and you start with Shmon Esrei, then you don't have a possibility of Smichut Geula Tefillah. So our Brisa says that when he comes home, instead of going to take a break at home, he should go directly a beeline to the synagogue. And what should he do? Kore Kriyat Shmia and then Mitpalel.
In our view, we have Ashkivenu between guys.
All right. That's the kash. Okay, that's the sugya also. But in any event, that's called Gula Richta. I'm not, you know, we can cover everything, but I just want you to get the structure of the Gemara. The Gemara says the following, Misayele. Once again, we're learning a classic structure in Talmud Bavli. Misayele. This will support him. Le means low. In Hebrew, le is in Aramaic. Misaye is a Hebrew word, means to aid or support. Did you ever hear the phrase siyata dishmaya, correct? Siyata dishmaya means the help of God. So misaye, this will support Rabbi Yochanan. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan made the statement, Ezehu ben olam abba, who deserves a portion in the world to come? Ze is the individual, hasomech, who connects, Geula, the Brach of Gal Yisrael, L'Tefillah, to Tefillah. Now look at the next two words. Which Tefillah are we talking about? Shel Arvit. The night prayer. We're going to soon see that not everybody agrees to Rabbi Yochanan. Everybody agrees, listen carefully my friends, that in the morning we need Smichut Geula Tefillah. That means first comes Kriyat Shema ending with Gal Yisrael, and then comes Tefillah. But in the nighttime, not everybody agrees with Rabbi Yochanan. That's why Rabbi Yochanan wants to give an extra push for his opinion, and therefore he says, you know, I'm going to guarantee you a place in the world to come if you follow my view, and you recite Kriyat Shema and culminate with Gal Yisrael, and then subsequently you recite Tefillah. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omer. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, no, I disagree. Tefillot be emtza tiknum. The tefillot are in the middle. Let's explain. What we're going to have here is the following. Okay, let me just see if I can find. There we go.
The tefillot will be sandwiched.
Okay, sandwiched, exactly. It means the following. That we're going to have a sandwich. This is Kriyat Shema, and this is Kriyat Shema. So these are your two loaves of bread. What's in the middle? Tefillah and Tefillah. What does that mean? That in the morning, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi agrees, I'm going to start with Kriyat Shema and then recite Tefillah, because that's Smichus Gula Tefillah. Nobody denies that in the morning. But when we get to the evening, it's going to be reversed. We're going to start with Tefillah and end with Kriyat Shema. So there's not going to be Smichus Geula Litfila. Okay, I'm making up my own abbreviations here. That's according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So whereas Rabbi Yochanan wants to repeat the same sequence at night, it's always going to be Kriyat Shema and Tefillah. Why? Because he wants Smichus Geula Litfila even at night. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi wants Smichus Geula Litfila only in the morning, but not at night. So in the morning you start with Kriyat Shema, then you go to Tefillah. In the evening you start with Tefillah and Kriyat Shema. And the reason for this is because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi wants to start the day with Kriyat Shema and end the day with Kriyat Shema. Those are the bookends. And he wants to make sure that the two slices of bread are Kriyat Shema slices. And you begin with one Kriyat Shema, that's the morning Kriyat Shema, and you end the day with another Kriyat Shema. Hence, you have to forfeit Smichus Geula Tefillah at night, because the tefillah is going to come first.
How did we end up not following either?
Were you talking about Ashkivenu? You worried about
Ashkivenu and not following him?
Again, what we're going to say is the following. It's complicated. We're going to say that we accept Rabbi Yochanan, but in a lower case. What do I mean? The fundamental halacha or mitzvah of Smichus Geula Tefillah is in the morning. There's a secondary mitzvah of Smichus Geula Tefillah at night. Since it's secondary, we're going to allow for a little bit of flexibility. So we're going to wedge in Hashkivenu. We won't allow in the morning to wedge in anything. It's Gal Yisrael, and then Baruch Atah Hashem, we start the Amidah. B'mai Kamiflegi. My friends, I couldn't have written a better text than this one that we're studying if I wanted to teach beginners how to learn Gemara. Because all the phrases that repeat themselves on every page are right here in this little Gemara. B'mai, in what? Ka, are they? Miflegi. Miflegi means a plugta. Plugta is the Aramaic word for a machloket, a controversy or a debate. So b'mai ka miflegi, what are they arguing about? Right, miflege is a verb that's a conjugated noun. The noun itself is plugta. You might want to write that down. Plugta. Plugta means a division, otherwise known as a controversy or a debate. Bimai, what are they arguing about? Meaning, let's get down to the basics. Before we had some good air conditioning. Now I don't feel the air conditioning at all. I don't know. Did somebody shut it off? Go figure it out. Ebait Ema, if you like, I will tell you. Kra, they're arguing about a pasuk, a verse in the Torah. Ebait Ema, if you like. Svara, they're arguing about some logical principle. Let's go through it. Ebait Ema, Svara. I'll take the second one first. This is like what you call ABBA. So the second possibility was Svara, meaning some sort of logical principle. And that's what the Gemara is going to say here. De Rabbi Yochanan, Savar Rabbi Yochanan, some of the opinion, Geula Me'arta Urta Nami Havi. Okay, here I have to ask you a historical question. Maybe you know the answer. When did the Jewish people exit from, when was the exodus from Egypt? Was it during the daylight or at night? It was the day. It was only in the daytime that the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. So that means that the Geula, the redemption, took place during the day. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan, he says, no, it's much more complicated than that. There was a redemption at night. Rashi explains that what he has in mind is that even at night, at midnight, you remember that Paro called in Moshe and Aaron, he said to them, you know, we're dying like flies over here, it was Makas Bechoros. So he said, terminate this Makah, this terrible plague. So they said to Paro, only if you free the people. So at midnight, the night before the Yetziyah Mitzrayim, they left, on that midnight, which is the 15th of Nisan, Paro freed the slaves. So that's called Geula. Me'orta means from the nighttime. Nami also have. You know, although the leaving, the actual exodus, you know, if you were, let's say you're producing a movie called Exodus, so the exodus would take place at daytime, right? Because you know, the Jewish people didn't go out like thieves in the night. They went out, you know, to daybreak and in front of all the people. There was no hiding about it, and no one was able to do anything about it because God was protecting the people. But already, the process of redemption had already begun the night before they left, insofar as Paro, at that point in time, already freed the slaves. Ela Geula me'aliyasa, the real full-fledged Geula, me'aliyasa means milashon aliyah, aliyah means the highest level, lohavya did not take place ela until ad safra, until daybreak. So the two words here, there are antonyms. One is urta, urta means the night, and safra means the morning. So there was also a geula at night, but that's the also geula, meaning that's the lesser case geula, secondary geula. The real geula ma'al yisah, when they actually left Mitzrayim, only took place with daybreak. So if you ask Rabbi Yochanan, which is more important, smichus geula tefillah in the morning or smichus geula tefillah at night? Smichus geula tefillah by morning is going to be much more important because that's what we call the geula ma'al yisah. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Sava, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was of the opinion, came on since the lo havya elamit safra, since the real exodus did not take place until daybreak, lo havya geula ma'al yisah. We don't define the geula at night as a serious enough geula that would warrant that we should make sure to recite geula before tefillah, because that's not the real makoy geula. So as Rabbi Yochanan is willing to give the geula at night a status, albeit a secondary status, it's not, you know, what do they say about Coca-Cola? It's the real thing. So maybe this is not the real thing, but it's still very important. Masha Enkin, in contrast, Rabbi Shubin Levi says, you know what, that's not called geula. What happened at night was the freedom from slavery, but that's not really what geula is all about. Until the Jewish people actually left Mitzrayim, that's not considered geula. And therefore, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi rejects the idea of smichus geula tefillah at night. He would prefer to have the tefillah sandwiched in between the Kriyat Shema the morning and the Kriyat Shema at night. Hence, when Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi prayed the evening prayer, what did he start with before Kriyat Shema? Amidah with the tefillah. Sounds very strange to our ears because we very much accepted Rabbi Yochanan in this case. But now, Iboit Emakra. It's quite possible, as an alternative, that the debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi revolves around a verse in the Torah. Ushneim, and both of them, both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Mikra Echad, one verse, Darshu. Darshu means they interpreted it. In other words, they offered two different interpretations of the same single verse. Dichtiv, what is the verse? Bishavbecha uvekumecha. Meaning, in the parasha of Kriyat Shema, the Torah says, recite Kriyat Shema when you go to sleep and when you wake up. Rabbi Yochanan sees an equation here between B'shalbucha and B'kumecha. That's called a hekesh, or in a verb form, it's makish. Makish means to make an analogy, to make it an equation. Makish shchiva l'kima. The Torah in one breath mentions the nighttime and the daytime, when you go to sleep and you wake up. Ma, Just as kima, when you wake up, kriya shma comes first, v'achikach, and only then tefillah, af, so too, shchiva, nami, when you go to sleep at night, kriya shma comes first, v'achikach tefillah. As we said, Rabbi Yochanan wants a mirror image between what you do in the morning and what you do in the evening. It's always going to be the same. That's called makish shchiva l'kima. Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi Sover, in contrast, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi holds Makish Shchiva L'Kima. Yes, there's an equation between when you go to sleep and when you wake up. Kima, just as when you wake up, Kriyat Shema. The first thing you do is you recite Kriyat Shema, Samuch L'Mitaso. Very close to his bed, meaning as soon as he gets out of bed. Af Shchiva Nami, so too when he goes to sleep at night, Kriyat Shema should be the last thing, Samuch L'Mitaso. Right before he gets into bed, which means that he's already prayed. Masiv Mar Braid Ravina. Wait a minute. What time is it, gentlemen? You have to go.
Just in a couple minutes.
All right. So I'll try to. You know, we're almost at the end. So I thought maybe we could make it to the finish. We started a little bit later.
Oh.
So anyway, it says Masiv. Musiv means to ask a contradiction, to raise a contradiction. Mar, bereid Ravina. Mar, the master, the son of Ravina. And he's going to raise an objection from a Mishnah, which we haven't studied yet. This Mishnah is on page 11. And it says the following, Ba'erev in the evening, Mevarech shtayim lefanela, he should recite two blessings, two brachot before, lefanel, before Kriyat Shema. That's called Ma'ariv HaRavim and Avat Olam. Right, if you open up a siddur, you'll see two blessings before Kriyat Shema. And then Shtayim L'Achreya, there are going to be two blessings after Kriyat Shema at night. And that is Gal Yisrael and Hashkivenu. V'i Amrit Boy Lismoch. Now the question is as follows. If Rabbi Yochanan says that you need smichus geula tefila, and even in the nighttime division, so Kriyat Shema has to culminate with Gal Yisrael and then tefila. Well, I have news for you. Lo kasamach. He's not fulfilling this requirement of smicha of geula tefila. Why do haboy lemeimar hashkivenu? This was the question you asked before, Colin, right? Mm-hmm. That hashkivenu wedges between Gal Yisrael and tefila. So where's the smichus? Amri, they said, when it says they said, without mentioning a name anonymously, it's referring to the yeshiva students in the Beis Medrash. Mm-hmm. They said the following, Kevan to Takinu Rabbanon, once the Rabbanon made this enactment, Takinu Milosha Takona, Takona is enactment of Hashkivenu, to recite Hashkivenu, Ki, it's like, Geula Arichta Damya, Damya means it's similar to, Arichta means a long Geula. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean, a long geula? I mean, after all, you already recited Gal Yisrael, the first bracha after Kriyat Shema Shel Arvis. Now you're adding a second bracha, Hashkivenu, in which you thank Hashem for protecting you when you go to sleep at night. Why is that called geula arichta? And the answer is, again, there may be many answers. I'm just going to offer one answer, because the theme of Hashkivenu is Shmira. Shmira means protection. We ask God for protection. Geula is not enough. God can redeem us, but if he doesn't follow through, you know, you need a follow-up, and that is protection, then we're left to suffer, you know, at the hands, at the mercy of our enemies, or of nature, you know, they're out in the wilderness. So we need desperately to ask God not just to redeem us, but to protect us. And that's called Shomer Amo Yisrael La'ad. That's Hashkivenu. So at night, we're going to ask for protection of the Geula, that's called Hashkivenu, and that has the status of Geula Arichta. It's a continuation of Geula. Okay, my friends, we didn't get to the finish line, but we're almost there, and I see we're running out of time, so we'll stop here. And I think what we covered tonight is not only a lot of interesting ideas, but moreover, a lot of the very basic structures and phrases of the Gemara. So I hope that you were able to get something out of it. Mm-hmm.